Hi, folks. I'm Jalene Fenner, and welcome to Strong Tower Radio, featuring a community service program with my co-host,
Tom Majeur.
And this is a feature that we've been doing for a couple months now to help our listeners know more about their community.
All around the state, we've got great plans across the state, and today we have a special guest. Is the Michigan State Police.
And Tom, why are the Michigan State Police here?
Well, it's because I took advantage of an opportunity that it was presented by the service, and it's being done across the state, and they brought this program. It's called the Michigan State Police Citizens Academy, and they held a session here in Cadillac, Michigan, which they've done throughout the state.
And so you learn more about the state police and maybe some laws. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about what this is all about.
Yes, and we have one of the troopers who actually conducted the session, as well as the post commander today.
Okay, so I'm going to introduce, we have Trooper Ryan Kriebel.
Good afternoon.
And you're one of them that helped Tom, was part of it?
I was one of the instructors for it, yes.
Okay, all right, and then we have Lieutenant Travis House.
Thank
and
you.
So now you are in charge of the post here?
I'm the post commander at the Cadillac State Police
Okay,
post.
Okay. And it's good to be here. I was originally with the Silent Observer when they started it, because we used to meet there at
they still
the
do.
Post.
They
yeah,
still
I
do,
wondered
yeah.
if they still do. And I remember one thing about it, because you've got a nice building there, and at the time when I was part of the Silent Observer, you were the only post that had a dishwasher. I don't know if that's still true, but I remember that was a big deal to the guys back then. Yeah. Well, Tom, let's have a word of prayer.
Our Father in heaven, it's what a privilege to come before you, and you believe in law and order of organization and respect of authority and respect of individuals. And so, dear Lord, be with us as we talk with the officers and to learn about their role and our role. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.
So, Tom, is there a Bible verse that we need to talk about?
Absolutely. It's Romans 13:1. This is the New International Version, and it is, everyone must submit themselves to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. What a powerful thought. Mm-hmm. And then the authorities that exist have been established by God.
Yeah, so that's me. Well, God is a God of law and order. And so I guess first off, is there a motto to the state police?
We do have a motto that we kind of live by, and it's a proud tradition of service through excellence, integrity, and courtesy.
Okay, and that's a very good model, I'd say.
That's
right. You know,
And I believe they live that. Courtesy is everything I saw. I was there for this. It's an 8-week program. I was able to be a part of 6 of the week and made up on 2. The courtesy I saw with the officers was impeccable, and my hat's off and thank you for your service, both of you.
Well, thank you.
You're more than welcome.
So what is the role of the Michigan State Police?
I'll take the first one, Trooper Kriebel, if you don't mind. That's a very broad question. The role of the Michigan State Police is really to provide a statewide law enforcement body for the state of Michigan. The little bit of how we work is we have a director who is kind of a cabinet member to the governor of the state of Michigan, and we are spread out then as a field bureau throughout the state of Michigan with troopers, sergeants, lieutenants who work at the post, which are the people that are generally seen and interacted with amongst the general public. But we also have a very large part of our department that is made up of civilian members, analysts, forensic scientists, people that are civilians versus enlisted. And they provide those services not just to our troopers who are taking calls for service, doing investigations and need lab work, for example, but also provide that service to local law enforcement. So when, for example, the Wexford County Sheriff's Office or the Cadillac Police Department here in town takes a criminal investigation and processes some and removes some fingerprints at a scene, those go to a Michigan State Police mm-hmm. crime laboratory for analysis. Other services that we provide throughout the state include things like a SWAT team. We call it our emergency support team that comes in for very dangerous situations to deal with barricaded individuals who are dangerous or to serve dangerous search warrants, that sort of thing. We have multi-jurisdictional task forces, which are made up of both state police employees and local law enforcement, but they are run by the Michigan State Police. We have canine units, Marine Services team, all resources that are available at no cost to local law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the makeup of different local law enforcement agencies throughout the state of Michigan, they're very different, right? I mean, you've got organizations that are as large as Detroit Police Department, mm-hmm. right, which is huge, down to small police departments such as Manton PD, who has one officer. They have one officer, right? So the very large ones like Detroit or Wayne County or Oakland County or even Kent County, Grand Rapids PD, they have many of these resources and are able to fund them, train them, and keep those resources available to help them to provide law enforcement services. Some of the smaller agencies, that's just not possible. So we can step in and provide those services to the local agencies, again, at no cost.
So another question, how many posts are there in the state of Michigan? Because not each county has one.
That's correct. And just a quick backstory, prior to 2011, there were 62 posts in the state. And for those who remember, we went through a tough, tough budget time in 2011.
You hardly had enough gasoline to run the cruisers.
That's correct. There's some bad memories from that time. But we were forced to close many of our buildings and to consolidate into these larger regions. And that brought us down to 29 and now 30 posts, mm-hmm. and we're about to add a 31st, which is kind of big news for this area in Traverse City. So the Cadillac Post area is actually splitting up with part of that area going to the Traverse City.
So then the Cadillac Post, how many counties do you cover?
So we currently cover five, mm-hmm. Wexford, Manistee, Grand Traverse, Benzie, and Leelanau. With the pending split, Cadillac's going to retain Manistee, Wexford, and pick up Maswaukee, mm-hmm. from the Houghton Lake Post. Mm-hmm. And the new Traverse City Post will have Grand Traverse, Benzie, and Leelanau.
So it'll basically circle the bay.
Yes. Yeah. And that was the post area that existed prior to the reorganization in 2011. They had those three counties there.
So sounds like we're being funded because, the days we're living in all this defund the police, but it sounds like, we're getting more police than.
Well.
No, they're taking some of
your
guys.
There's a lot more to that conversation than just the one post, I'm afraid. But we have been able to come up with it. We already owned the building in Traverse City. We've maintained that since the reorganization as a detachment of the current Cadillac Post. Mm-hmm. We aren't going to necessarily be adding any bodies. We're taking bodies from other areas to put in that location. And for example, the commander of that new building will be come from a position that was at the Cadillac Post as being dissolved and mm-hmm. brought up there. So mm-hmm. the cost involved is actually quite low.
Okay. Well, that's good, though.
Well, there's many things. Trooper Kriegel, you're on the road. What is it like in the day and the life of a trooper?
Well, we have different shifts that we can all kind of bid for, a day shift, 6 a.m. to 4 p.m., an afternoon shift if you work 2 p.m. to midnight, and then we have our midnight shifts that cover, 6 p.m. To 4 a.m. and another one from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. So the typical trooper bids to whatever, seniority they have. The more senior trooper gets whatever shift they want, and the least senior person has to get what's left over. You kind of have to, earn it, I guess. But we all kind of, most of us start our day at our house. We have take-home cars, and the benefit of that is it saves me time personally with my family, upwards to 2 hours a day. But the other benefit of that is I live in Wexford County, so when I start my shift at 2 p.m., I'm already in the county. I don't have to start here in Cadillac. I can start responding to, if I had to go to Buckley, for example, I'm already halfway there. So there's benefit of having the take-home car there. We work our 10-hour shift. We go between dispatch complaints. If there's a call for service, if, say, there's maybe an assault-type crime, the closest police officer go to that. If there's an emergency, if maybe a traffic crash with injuries or something, and then, the trooper does, traffic enforcement as well. We kind of have two hats that we have to wear. As investigative agency, which is kind of what I like to say is the bread and butter of the state police, we're very good with our criminal investigations and take pride in those. But on the other end of it, we still have to wear the highway patrol hat and still have to perform the traffic safety initiatives through the state. Kind of like one of our initiatives is for M-115 in Wexford County, which, is kind of a problem area. So we dedicate a lot of patrols to that, just try to mitigate some of the speed that we see coming to the area.
Yes. There's so many things, we alluded to earlier about the Citizens Academy. We were well versed in a number of these topics, and it's just amazing what we learned in that. I want to go back to Lieutenant House mentioning about the civilians. Most people do not realize that behind you, backing you up, is a large support and the professionalism of the investigation and support staff is totally amazing. The other thing that Trooper Kriebel, that you mentioned is the professionalism, the training. Tell our listeners a little bit about the training. I've always respected personally. I was brought up to respect authority and the police. It was definitely part of that. And I've always thought that the state police actually held them on a very, very high, I don't want to say more than anybody else, but in a way, yes. But when you explained the training, it was surprising, the depth, and you compared it even to military training. Could you rehearse that?
Absolutely. So the training academy was 26 weeks long. It's kind of been streamlined down to 21 weeks. But in that, they're not losing any training. It's just kind of been combined together, I guess you could say. So during the training academy, it's very rigorous. And I was a veteran and several veterans out of my recruit school. And we all kind of collaborated and agreed that the training academy for the state police was so much harder than boot camp was, mm-hmm. just because it's a long day. And we are a paramilitary organization, so we have a structured base off military. For example, our post commander, it has the rank of a lieutenant, which would be an Army rank. So we kind of model ourselves off of that, which then our training also follows. And that's kind of why we pride ourselves with professionalism, but it all comes from the strict, rigorous training we get at the academy. And then after you leave the 21-week academy, you come to the post and you still have an additional 17 weeks of on-the-job training with senior troopers on the road, which by no means is easy. It's first we kind of hold their hand and guide them through. This is kind of what we expect. Phase two of the training is a little bit more of hands off. We watch them a little bit more and still give some guidance in it. Phase three is, kind of expected. This is, you're expected to know this. And then there's a 2-week shadow phase of make it or break it. You have to demonstrate that you've learned everything in order to be a full trooper on your own. So it's a very long process to become a trooper.
So, yeah, to become a trooper, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about, like, if somebody wants to, how do you apply, but there is 21 weeks of training.
Yes.
And of, like, schooling.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's 17 weeks of on-the-job training at a post.
Yes. So for the 21 weeks, you're living at the training academy for 6 days a week. So you drive down to Lansing on Sunday night, and then you get to leave Friday night, so you get Saturday at home basically with your family, which almost makes it harder. One of the benefits of boot camp was, you didn't see your family, so after a few days you missed them, but it wasn't the forefront of your mind. But Mondays and Tuesdays at the academy are some of the hardest days because you really miss your family.
Because you're back home, then you got to leave again.
Yes, so that's one of the struggles with it, but again, that's kind of, it helps bring us into what we are, or mold us into the trooper that we are expected to be.
Is there a minimum age that somebody can apply?
Well, you have to be 21 years old upon graduation of the academy to be a state trooper. Sometimes there are exceptions to that, very rarely, but generally you have to be 21 years old to be a state trooper.
And then another thing I heard you say, you were a veteran.
Yes.
So how is there a percentage of how many troopers are veterans?
I don't know the percentage. I know it's quite a high percentage because Michigan we have what's called a veterans preference mm-hmm. hiring, which, if two equal candidates apply and they'll select the veteran then over the non-veteran. Mm-hmm. And we've received an award on hiring veterans.
I could tell you, as working in the recruiting world for a year or so for the state police just a few years ago, we recruit heavily from military branches for a couple reasons. One, like Trooper Kriebel said, that there is some added points for going into the hiring process for that. But also that the skill sets some of them are much the same. The expectations in a lot of ways are the same. When you think about us being a paramilitary organization and following some of those same rules, it only makes sense that the people that come from the military can easily assimilate into our culture. So.
But on the other side of that is we pride ourselves with being very diverse. And so while there's a lot of veterans in the state police, that's not what we're all like. I mean, there's a lot of us that are almost super nerds. We have a trooper that has a master's degree in accounting and was a financial advisor prior to becoming a trooper. We have some people that have full careers before they transition to become troopers. And that diversity is something that we pride ourselves on because that's what makes us a whole, complete team. Where, you know, some military members might have more of a tactical sense, you know, as far as officer safety goes when dealing with certain situations. On the other end of it, when we have a complex crime of, say, maybe an embezzlement case or something like that, where that's not my strong suit, we have other troopers that have experience in this, and we kind of rely on each other. So that diversity is what really brings us together, makes us effective.
Well said.
You know, Tom, I never thought about that, but that makes sense that it's not just, you know, young guys, you know, coming out of the service or, you know, in their early 20s coming, that they've already had some other life experience or been to college or something. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. You said the words young guy. I mean, we have lots of women. I won't say lots, but a fair amount of women. And several recently, more on in the years recruits. We've had a couple that have completed recruit school in their late 40s here as of late. And,
yes.
Which is no small task. I give those individuals an incredible amount of respect.
Yeah, I didn't mean to be, what's the word?
Well, we like to highlight our female troopers, too, because there's things we could not get done without them. Mm-hmm. If you think about the compassion that they have, and they're tough, too. I tell you, I had a midnight partner. She was tougher than nails, but there's often times where maybe a victim of a crime, especially if it was like a domestic violence survivor, might find it hard to talk to me as being a male. That's when a female trooper really comes in benefit, where they can kind of connect a little bit better.
Yeah. I would like to, one thing that stood out in my mind that the respect grew after going through the academy, and we want to talk about the academy a little bit. When you talked about that show a force, you talked about that, and you can use the correct term for it, but you increase only appropriately to keep the situation under control. But as soon as it's the perpetrator has been subdued, you de-escalate. And what the story you told about after a trooper a partner of his, he went through the academy, was shot and killed, he gave aid as soon as to that perpetrator. You call it turning the switch.
Mm-hmm.
That, can you explain that for our listening audience?
Yeah, so in our use of force is what we call it, and that's, in the unfortunate time when we do have to use force upon somebody. It's exactly, we kind of call it as a light switch. When the aggression against us or against another person has stopped, our aggression must stop. And we use enough force to make sure that we can be safe and that everybody else is as safe as possible, and to stop the threat as soon as possible, but we never use more force than is necessary. You know, if, you know, the law would justify me to maybe use a strike, as in maybe, throw a kick or a straight punch or something at somebody. But I believe that this certain circumstance that I could use less force than that to take to subdue the person. So that means maybe just going hands on. Well, then just because the law would allow me to use that extra force doesn't mean that's what we use. We always go less than is.
I use the lowest amount that's necessary to get the job done.
And the compassion that you showed, I mean, you described that, and I had to switch my mind to turning the light switch of caring for that person as soon as the perpetrator. That just blew my mind, and my respect just increased exponentially.
That's
part of training.
Right? 100% in the academy, and that's what they describe it to us in the academy, is flipping that light switch, because at one moment, I could be in a knockout brawl with a person where I could be in very serious danger, or somebody else could, and you know, you have to use physical violence upon somebody, and then the next second, as soon as that person's subdued, you pick them up, dust them off, and check them for injuries, make sure that they're okay, because in the end, that's what we want, is everybody to be okay. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of that light switch from physical aggression to back down to trying to, can I help this person?
Compassion.
You know, exactly, yes. And it's an unfortunate circumstance when we have to use force, and none of us ever want to. But when we have to, you know, we all have to be capable of doing so as well.
Let's talk about the Citizens Academy. You explained a little bit about it, and there's 8 different sessions to it. We have a couple minutes to talk about it. Trooper Kriegel, please share that.
Yeah, so it's broken up into 8 weeks. So the introduction to the state police is kind of covers week one, kind of where we came from as an emergency force in 1917 when we were established
Well, it was originally to ensure the iron. Yes. The iron got to market in the Upper Peninsula in 1917. Is that what you were discussing?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So after World War II and during World War II, there were some issues with labor. Actually, I believe in the UP that kind of sparked the inception of the Michigan State Police. And then in 1917, Governor Sleeper moved us into what was called the Michigan State Troops, and actually that was the actual official beginning of the Michigan State Police, and we did some prohibition stuff back in the day. We did again some of this iron ore. We're kind of famous for this standoff at Bessemer, and that strangely making sure that the iron ore got needed to go. So
then in week two we kind of covered over patrol procedures and our equipment. So I kind of talked about the general day of a trooper, what we do, and then the equipment that is afforded to us. That was half of the day. The other half was first aid instruction, which the part of the academy's goal is to bring people in, kind of like see what the state police are like and maybe have a better understanding of what we do and why we do. But on the other end of it is to benefit the citizens as well by teach them personal safety things, maybe first aid, something they can do for themselves or something they can do for their fellow citizens. So in that, we covered first aid. It was very similar to the first aid training that we get, just a very watered down version of it. And in one of our hands-on activity for that was citizens got to apply a tourniquet, which is a medical device that we use to stop blood flow. So, for example, if I have a bleed somewhere in an extremity, like an arm or a leg, that I can't control from an injury or maybe in a car accident or something, we can apply that to stop the bleeding. So the citizens were able to learn how to apply a tourniquet. Then we talked about our use of force and personal safety. So I talked about the requirements upon us when we do have to use force upon somebody, and also talks about what things citizens can do to keep themselves safe. So it wasn't like a self-defense class, but it was more things that you can pay attention to, maybe reading people and, okay, what kind of actions can I take? What do I need to look for in maybe a person that could be potentially violent or dangerous? Week 4 covered our home's safety and preventing breaking and enterings, which, you know, is kind of a big problem in our area, which is one of our strategic goals, is kind of quell more of our breaking and entering complaints that we have, because it's a rural area. There's some weekend cabins that people don't see for many months at a time, and so that's something that we run into a lot. So things that you can do to keep your house more safe, especially if you go on vacation for Florida for a little bit. Week 5 covered our traffic safety, so that covered, you know, like the highway patrol hat that we have to wear, and that covered traffic crash statistics, OWI enforcement, so drunk driving enforcement, speed enforcement, texting while driving, so it kind of covered some of that, our traffic safety things.
And we got to see a traffic stop was reenacted with the participants.
We did do some mock traffic stops where we took a patrol car and a trooper that went into in civilian clothes and used his own car, and the citizens got to do traffic stops on him, which I thought he did a great job, kind of giving them a little bit of resistance here and there, and it was very comical, but we had a good time with it. But I think a lot of people learned because he used phrases and sayings that people use with us on the road, or kind of common things that we hear from somebody that might not be happy to see us. Week 6, the Wexford County Prosecutor came in and gave a training on the legal system, which I think was one of our more successful classes, because it's a lot of, there's a lot of things at the legal system that people maybe don't understand or don't remember from government class in high school. And so that was a very popular one where we covered everything from the Bill of Rights to when a trooper would or would not make an arrest on things. Week seven covered, again, the bread and butter of the state police, which is criminal investigations and what a trooper does when we, what we're looking for in certain types of crimes. We covered fingerprinting, evidence collection, which is very important to solving these crimes. Week eight, which was our graduation week, we covered drug awareness. So we had our drug team come in and give a demonstration, and the citizens were able to see some of the actual drugs that are in the area. So methamphetamine and heroin. And so we were able to see that and the such the negative impact that it has on our community. And then obviously our graduation.
Oh, you forgot the dog.
Well, yes, yes, our canine demonstration, Trooper Unterbrink came in and brought in both of his dogs, our patrol drug tracking dog, and then we also have a explosives detection dog, and both came in and gave demonstrations, and I think they were a favorite as well.
They were. As we are winding up this wonderful program, what does, Lieutenant House, what can we do as citizens for the Michigan State Police?
Well, that's a good question, and I thought about, I knew you were going to ask this question, Tom, so I thought about this a little bit prior to our meeting here, and the first thing is to be a good neighbor, take care of your community, you know, watch for things and speak up when you see things going wrong. Don't be afraid to call us if you see something that's out of the ordinary. Secondly, you know, be a good parent. You know, teach your kids some accountability, and that the police and the justice system is here for a reason. I can't tell you how many use of force reviews I've done, and I have to watch all these videos from our troopers who get involved in these unfortunate situations. It shocks me the number of people who I believe. By what they're saying and their actions, I think that they actually believe in their mind that if they tell a trooper, no, I don't have to do what you're telling me, then the trooper will just go away. And if your audience hears anything here, I don't think your audience is probably the target of this, but the law is in place for a reason. Mm-hmm. The troopers are very intelligent. They're very well trained. They know what they're supposed to do there out on the road. And if they're giving a lawful order and it's not followed, then yes, the truth is that not only will they, but they have a legal obligation to follow through and to make that, you know, finish that situation, whatever it may be. And lastly, you know, be a good citizen. If you see or pay attention to legislation that has to do with law enforcement in your neighborhoods and in your state, and speak up with your legislators if they want to pass a law that, like they did not long ago, that makes it very difficult for us to put people who've committed a misdemeanor into jail for any time, or give people who are criminals, even sometimes multi times over, get decent bond amounts. If they want to pass legislation that does those things, just pay attention. And if you disagree with it, speak up.
Speak up.
That's right.
Well, I want our listeners to remember all the police. They're our friends. They're not out there to hurt us. But if you're not going to obey the law, you could be in trouble.
We're citizens of the same state that everybody else is. We're just like everybody else. It's just this is the job that we have to do. And, you know, where we try our best to understand where people are coming from, but when we put the uniform on, there is the law of the state and that we have to enforce it. But on the inside, we are people just like everybody else with the same thoughts and feelings.
Well, I thank you so much. And so, Tom, I'm so glad you did this class and then thought about having this introduced for our community service. So thank you for listening. So glad both of you have been here. And I just pray that this has been a good program for our listeners.
Amen. Bye now.